I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with visual artist Tori Tinsley. Tori, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Glad to have some time to spend with you today. So let's talk about growing up. You're from Atlanta.
Yes.
Talk about your childhood. Where did you grow up in the city?
I grew up in Midtown and Ansley Park area. It was great, although there weren't very many kids around downtown at that time. I have left. I went to school out of state in Michigan, and then I lived in Chicago for a bit, but I always come back here. This is my home. This is where I want to be.
So what was it or what is it about Atlanta that seems to bring you back?
Well, definitely family. A lot of my family is still here. We're very close. And obviously my mom, I'm wanting to stay here so I can help take care of her. But Atlanta, I understand it so much in terms of driving around, the familiarity of that. And I just love that it keeps growing and changing right now. It's totally different than when I was little. And it's fun being an adult, being here and being an artist in particular and being able to participate in what's going on with the art scene. And it's just so open. I just feel like it's a small community. You get to know everybody really quick. It's very open to new ideas.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that there weren't many kids around when you were growing up. Now, was that just sort of the flow of the neighborhood where you were, or was it something else that made it seem like?
I think it was just the flow of the neighborhood. Growing up there, you didn't have a lot of kids riding on the busy streets of Ansley Park on their bikes or anything. It was more, I think I always grew up around a lot of adults, and that might have influenced how I am as an adult myself. And just being a kid, I was always a lot, I think, older than my friends, just in terms of how I interacted with others. But it just wasn't like my friends who lived in the suburbs and could play in the streets with their friends.
Right. But you were also close to Piedmont Park, though.
Yes.
So that's right there.
It is right there, but we didn't go over there a whole lot.
Really?
I don't know if back in – I feel like back then I remember playing on the Jungle Gym that it was created by a famous artist whose name – I don't think it was Calder, but it's very Calder-esque.
Okay.
Very bright blue, like spiraling a slide that is out there. I remember going there for different things like that and the Piedmont Arts Festival, but we didn't – Atlanta wasn't – I remember growing up feeling like it wasn't as safe, and I don't know if that was my parents' influence or just their thinking, although, I mean, I felt perfectly fine. I was living – we never had anything happen living down there, but I definitely feel like now the streets are more walkable. There's just so much going into – pedestrian traffic and also bike traffic. It just feels a little bit more livable in Midtown now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about your family and being close to your family. Talk about your mother and your relationship with your mother.
Yeah. Extremely close and very affectionate. And that was just from as early as I can remember. Me and my sister were just this tight-knit little, you know, threesome. And although my mom, she was married to my father, and they got a divorce, and then she remarried to my stepdad. And they ended up getting a divorce about 9 years later. But it was always really, I think, the three of us who went through all these, you know, challenging things together and transitions and joys and, you know, great things. But that, you know, close tie with her and her always kind of overseeing and being part of everything in my life obviously has really affected how I relate to her now and her being sick and having this disease.
Talk about that disease.
Yeah. So in 2009, she was diagnosed with frontotemporal degeneration, which is a disease that affects the front and side parts of the brain where your language is stored and your behavioral centers. So what it really does is it it completely changes the person that you know. So it's not so much affects the it doesn't so much affect the memory like Alzheimer's, but definitely more the personality of the person and their ability to relate to others. So we saw just her changing slowly, and then finally when they got the diagnosis, it was actually a relief because we're like, oh, like this is a name for something that's happening to her, and it's not just mom going off the deep end or, you know, changing because of, you know, she's later in life and yeah. She's depressed. It was definitely because of something, and it was devastating. It continues to be devastating. She's still sick. I mean, it's been going on for 6 years now. But at the same time, it does move quicker than some other dementias. She is in the later stages at this point in hospice care. But she does still know who I am. So there's a benefit in that.
Can you point to a moment mm-hmm. when you first noticed a shift in your relationship with your mother when she was first starting to exhibit signs?
Yes. I think one of the first times I noticed that something was off and I couldn't put my finger on why she was acting the way she was I used to be an art therapist when I worked at Devereaux, which is a mental health center for kids up in Kennesaw. And I put together an art exhibit for the kids at the Marietta Cobb Museum of Art. And so it was just this big, you know, event for the kids, as well as, you know, just for the team at Devereaux. And I was really excited about it. My mom came and just didn't seem at all like happy for me and didn't, it was a completely different person than how she had been in like past projects I'd put together. And I just remember being like, you know, I guess this isn't that great because my mom's not happy for me. And it was very hard. And there have been a lot of moments since then that in between then and her diagnosis where it's like, what is happening? And it's nice to be able to go back and be like, that wasn't really her and who she would, you know, how she would have interacted. But yeah, there were a lot of parts like that.
How has your relationship with your sister changed over that same time?
Definitely have become a lot closer. Mm-hmm. My sister does live in Philadelphia. So my mom was always very encouraging of any path that my sister and I wanted to take. And, you know, we continue that. We continue supporting each other. And although she can't be here to, you know, physically, you know, take care of my mom and manage, you know, that side of things, she is pursuing her dream of becoming a doctor. And what ended up happening is she decided to go in neurology after my mom was diagnosed, which I feel like we both were, you know, very much affected by this disease. But we continue to be really close. Just we talk every day pretty much. And I let her know what's going on. Called the phone app where you can like tango or, you know, like screen time or FaceTime or whatever. It's been really great so that my mom still can see her and talk to her. And she does try to get down here once a month.
Okay. So when it comes to your mom and embracing or sort of dealing with this challenge mm-hmm. In your life, how did you seek to give some context to what you wanted to present in your artwork about what was happening with, mm-hmm. with your mom?
Like, how did that begin?
Yeah.
I took – it all started – I was taking a – when I was an art therapist, I took an art and business course with Kamal Sinclair. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she had a business course over at SCAD, and I took it. And through that, things merged into what is now the Mom's Laugh Project, which was kind of my first – experiment in trying to put what was happening into a visual format. So with Mom's Laugh Project, it was paintings I created based on photographs of my mom's life, and they each had a date. And when that date came, you know, there were future dates. When that date came and the piece hadn't been sold, I would then sand it down, and then I would make videos of me destroying the work. And it was really to get people to feel, in a way, the loss that, you know, we were feeling on a continuous basis, because the audience could then participate and somehow intervene. You know, if they bought it, they could save this work and the memory, and I would tell them what the image was of and what it was about. So that went on for about a year and a half or so. And I don't have that work still. It is still my website. You know, it is important to me. But since then, things have changed as I've tried to understand this process in various forms. And in particular, you know, being in grad school, that's opened a whole lot of opportunities and doors I didn't even know I would be interested in opening, or, you know, things I'd be want to pursuing.
Talk about the actual destroying of that artwork, because I feel like in watching the video of you doing that, I'm not sure if it's a relief, if it's cathartic, if it's painful, all of those things, other emotions. I try to empathize with what was happening there, mm-hmm. but I wanted to get your perspective on the process of erasing that. What was that like for you?
It was painful because I would spend, you know, a good amount of time on those paintings. But I knew that it was important to follow through with that next step. So in sanding it down, I would be thinking, I need, like, it was cathartic, but it was also kind of traumatic, and then I was reliving that loss again through the process. But I felt it was necessary, so I continued to do it in the hopes that I could raise awareness and there'd be less stigma associated with this disease and there'd be more funding. You know, all these things I was hoping would come of
right.
doing that.
So let's shift gears slightly, mm-hmm. and I'm curious about how you approach your work in general, from mm-hmm. your paintings to your drawings to mixed media. So tell me how you what are some of your early steps when you are drawing versus a mixed media sculpture?
Drawing, I approach drawing and sculpture a little bit the same way. I love to experiment and play a lot in my studio, and I find that I actually create stronger work when I'm doing that rather than sitting trying to plan out something with a sketch or, you know, completely solidly with an idea. You know, and I have my sketchbook is full of ideas and little thumbnails, but generally my final work ends up looking nothing like what I had planned, and I find that that's actually better. So for my drawing work, I tend to be more expressive in my mark making and use that as a place to layer and have emotional release, but also experiment with these textures and things that I can't normally get with painting, which I find to be, I use painting differently. And I actually, I didn't realize, you know, why until recently. There was an artist, Eduardo Berliner, and he was saying that he was using, you know, photography to, you know, explore memory and loss and all these kind of things and time and place. And then you realize that painting has this history to it, and it's been around for so long, and that painting actually was a nice way to explore his subject because of its, you know, eternal importance. You know, this importance, it's always been there, and this, like, it's this object that has this whole history to it. And so I was experimenting with painting and, you know, tearing up my canvases and all this kind of stuff. But I think that there's something really lovely about painting and having its history there, and also painting about this loss and it having this permanence that obviously isn't permanent. I'm still exploring that and trying to figure that out. But so I'm definitely, I guess, more not as inclined to experiment as much with the materials with painting at the moment. as opposed to this obviously, I'm enjoying using like my phone and apps on my phone to come up with the imagery for my paintings, which I think is my little bit of experimentation before going into the painting. And then sculpturally, I love working with soft materials like fabrics and embroidery and stitching, because they have this obviously soft quality like the body, but also this kind of hominess and comfort that comes with, you know, your relationship with, well, hopefully your relationship with your mom or someone you're close to. So those are kind of some of the ways I use these different methods. The sculptures I'm still playing with, a lot of times they'll become different. I'll take them apart and put them with other things. They transform in my studio a lot. But I think that's part of the process and how I can hopefully, you know, continue to create stronger work.
Talk to me about the notion of the synthetic mother.
Ah, yes. So Harry Harlow is or was a, I think he might have passed. I don't know. But he, yeah, psychologist from the 1960s and had these experiments with these baby monkeys that he separated from their natural birth mothers early on, and then he put them into these experiments to see what, you know, how and why we love. And so he put some of the monkeys with these two different synthetic mothers. So one was just a wire mesh mom with a just one, you know, nipple that had milk coming out of it, and the other one was a mesh mom that he covered in terry cloth fabric. And he had these, they both had faces. Well, most of them, he had different experiments that happened, but a lot of them had these faces that are kind of frightening, and which I've incorporated into, you know, a lot of my work. They're kind of these smiling clown monkey faces. But what he found was that the terry cloth mother was more important to these baby monkeys, and they found security being with the terry cloth mother and would just go to the wire mesh, you know, milk mother just for food and then run back. So that's where that comes from. And he also came up with the idea of contact comfort, which is, you know, the title for the show. So I borrow a lot from his studies, and obviously, you know, this idea of trying to rebuild my mom in some way to continue to have that contact comfort, because, you know, as my mom gets, you know, further along in her disease, she's still there physically, and there's comfort in holding her hand and being with her, but, you know, she isn't there, like, you know, in terms of being able to connect with me on a emotional level, just like these synthetic mothers.
As your mom continues to confront this disease and lose her memory, mm-hmm. How has that made you think about your own memory?
Oh, yeah.
And how you try to either preserve those or mm-hmm. catalog those, or just how you contextualize your own memories now?
Yeah, there's a lot of, I have a lot of fear about this happening to me. There's a 50% chance that it could be genetic with my mom, and then that would mean that, you know, my sister and I could have a pretty high percentage rate of also having the same thing happen to us. So in knowing that, I actually have a new project that I've been working on where I've made little in memory of plates, but they're like the ones you see on the back of benches. So I've had those ordered and recreated ones that say, like, in memory of the time I totaled my first car. And what I'm going to do is actually place those. Hopefully I won't get in trouble, but I want to place those in those places where they happened and have them be my own, you know, memory markers, and then photograph that and catalog that. I don't know if it'll, you know, be made into a book, or I'll just do the photographs or have a tour of my sites, but I want to, I think it, obviously, this is stemming from this whole experience, but it also is about preserving myself in case that does happen, because I just don't know.
Has that also made you more cognizant of creating memories, like being more, for lack of a better term, more willing to live in the moment, or trying to make sure that you're you're maximizing these moments slash memories so that if and when, you know, if and when ...
Yeah.
That you do have something of value or something that you can look back on and say that was amazing.
Yeah. I after my mom's diagnosis, I had blonde hair when she first got diagnosed, and then I soon after, within a week or two, I dyed it jet black. And I think that was my way of saying perhaps mourning of some kind, but also, okay, now's the time I'm just going to do whatever I want and not worry about it being, right or wrong or, appropriate for, my job at the time. But I'm just going to do these things that I've been wanting to do because life is short and I just don't know what's going to happen. And I loved being an art therapist, but, there came a point when it's life, life needs to be enjoyed to the fullest. It's not that long. And so I wanted to pursue my art as a career. So I, at Georgia State, using that time to, build my work and my, connections, and it definitely feels right. I feel like it kind of awakened me in a way, this whole experience. I unfortunately didn't get to see Nick Madden's show at iDrum, but I think it was I'd Rather Die High was the title, and his work is about losing his mother to, I believe dementia or Alzheimer's, and his father, has cancer, and it's I'd rather die doing something enjoyable than slowly, in the care of someone else and not having any control over that. I think it's terrifying, and I'm trying to, do things that might scare me, but I know I'll enjoy.
You talked about the synthetic mother experiment earlier, and given where you are with your mom right now, how has your concept of love changed?
I don't know. How has my concept of love changed? I think that, I'm not sure. I don't know if I've had time to think about that. Funny, because I have been talking about love this whole time. But I think that obviously unconditional love is something. I think, honestly, unconditional love is hard to come by. I think that it's ideal if you can get it from your parents, but that doesn't always happen. And so I think that I've been, trying to, obviously, I unconditionally love my mom, and I'm going to do anything I can to care for her. And it means sacrifice and being there. There's a lot of guilt that goes into caretaking, you're never doing enough. So I don't know if guilt has something to do with love at this point. But, I'm going to have to think about that. Sorry, not a good answer.
Fair enough. What else are you passionate about right now? You have talked about sort of doing those things that you really want to do because life is short. So what are your other passions right now?
I love to travel with my husband. We haven't been doing a whole lot of it, but just getting out there and just enjoying the world as it is something that we both love doing, though we never make time for it. For me, just being in my studio is such a dream, and just putting my whole heart, and soul into that at the moment is great. I think before my mom got sick, I would have been I don't think I can talk on a podcast. I would have been super nervous. or even just, you know, pursuing, like, following up with people. I've been like, oh, I don't want to bother them. But it's helped me, like, do so many things and just getting myself out there and not being afraid of if people will like it or not. So that's changed. I just want to say that.
As someone who is an Atlanta native who has left and come back and seen lots of changes, what inspires you about what's happening in Atlanta right now, the current energy in the city?
That people are encouraging and supportive of, like, anything you want to do.
Okay.
I just went to an iDrum meeting. They're looking, you know, for new stuff coming up, and they're like, yeah, the weirder the better. And I was like, yes, you know, because I have weird ideas, and the weirder things that I shared, the more excited they got. So that's wonderful. That I just love that although it is a small community, and I know people do leave, you know, and I don't want them to leave, but they do. There's just a continual, you know, renewal of the connections here and just getting to meet new people. And there are a lot of people coming in, and but you meet them very quickly, and it's like it's upbeat and positive here. And I don't feel this sense of, you know, people being competitive and not wanting to share the wealth. There's, you know, I feel like there's enough for everyone. I could be wrong on that and naive, but I really do feel that way. And it's exciting to be part of. And I feel like the community as a whole, outside of the art community, is excited about it because you're seeing these, you know, things that are, you know, positive changes in their, you know, in neighborhoods or just the beautification, you know, around different parts, I think is just, well, to me as an artist, it's very enjoyable.
Tori Tinsley, visual artist, let everyone know how they can learn more about you. Yes. And your work, as well as FTD.
Yes. If you want to learn more about FTD, go on to www.aftd.org. And if you'd like to learn more about my own work, you can go to my website, www.toritinsley.com, or you can follow me on Instagram, tori.tinsley, or Facebook, tori.tinsley. That's it.
Tori, thank you.
Thank you.